And its conversation is with Greg Ryan, who is a history professor, and he is also, I hope, a beer lover. And he's written Continuous Ferment, a book that's been released, and it tells the story of New Zealanders and beer, and you can't tell that story without Māori and beer because, well, our people like it as much as anyone else. Thanks for joining us on the show today, Greg. A warm welcome to you. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe. Good to be here. Thanks, Dale.
Kia ora. Assuming you like beer, I certainly have over the years.
Yeah, I do. I survived what was around when I was a student in the 80s and some better stuff in the 90s and some really, really good stuff around now.
Good on you. Do you drink?
Got to do the research,
mate. You've got to research. It sounds like decades of research. Good on you. Well, it's an interesting read. Of course, the drinks caused a lot of issues to Tangata Whenua, but it's also given us a hell of a lot of neat guitar parties in garages with gajinga jink and lots of convivial behaviour. But it has an up and a downside. What's the history of beer in this country, mate?
Well, the history here, the very first beer was brewed by Captain Cook and his crews on their second voyage down at Dusky Sound. They were imagining that it was going to be a cure for scurvy. There was sort of an idea that if you had something kind of bubbly and fermenting, it might be good for the stomach, and they thought that that would cure scurvy. Of course, it didn't, but they at least got a nice beer out of it. And then after that, it's sort of the first permanent breweries really around Paihia, I think, Samuel Pollack. And then pretty much after that, every small Pākehā settlement as it emerges has a new brewery. Not because people wanted alcohol, but it was just a normal part of the society where a lot of those settlers had come from. Beer drinking was a normal thing to do.
Yeah, and of course, back in the day, I did see a program which intrigued me. In order to clean up risky water, the Chinese put leaves in it, became tea, and of course, we or our forebears decided to ferment it to make the dubious water palatable, and here we have beer. So it's arrived here literally and brewed all over the place, and while we like a drink and a giggle and a laugh and a song, it also has a downside too, which has existed since we first started drinking this stuff in this land, eh?
Yeah, it has. Beer's an interesting one because the very first sort of temperance society up in the Bay of Islands, missionaries in the 1830s, trying to curb alcohol, was really opposed to spirits. They wanted to ban all spirits, and there's quite a few pieces of early legislation trying to ban the sale of spirits to Maori or consumption by Maori, but they had no real problem with wine and beer at the time. So there was this idea that beer was a lot safer, a lot better for you than spirits. And so there's not really any legislation against beer drinking by Maori, but there is certainly against spirits. So that's partly why I was looking at beer and not just the whole alcohol debate, because I thought, you know, beer is a little bit different as the kind of ordinary everyday drink, whereas your whiskies and gins and other things are always treated a bit differently.
I'm interested in our connection with it as well, but historically, of course, you've touched on it before, it wasn't widely available, and then there's the obvious issue in the King Country where the old people there said, no, we don't even want any of it in our land. I mean, I'm not quite sure if I go with the kōrero you've probably heard that our forebears, Māori, pre-European, didn't have any mind-altering substances, which made us something or quite unique, according to anthropologists. But do you read into that? What we do know is that there was, a no from many of our old people back in the day. The King Country, as an example, what might you mention of that?
Oh, absolutely. There's quite a few formal letters to governors and others from different iwi around the country in the 1840s, 50s, 60s, and onwards, and then the King Country for a long time, absolutely stressing we do not want alcohol here. But again, actually, many of those things were focused on on spirits, and there's actually a lovely case around Nelson in around 1859-60, where local Maori say, hold on, if we're not allowed to have beer alongside the Pākehā, you know, they consider it normal after, you know, working a hard day in the fields, but we're not allowed it. Well, if we're not allowed it, then we might go off and establish our own brewery. They didn't, but even the local newspapers thought that they actually had a reasonable point, because it was making this whole argument that beer was this thing that went alongside hard work and sport and other things, and it wasn't always regarded as the problem drink. But certainly a lot of places said it's easier just to squeeze out everything.
Beer barons had a quite the status in society. We were able to buy up great tracts of land. I'm thinking of Puketutu Island right here on the Manukau Harbour, which was originally owned by, I think, the head of DB. I grew up in a time there's only two breweries really in town, and that was DB and Lion, but that's certainly changed. And then we have the ugliness of the 6 o'clock swill, and that affected many families. Post-war guys came back, they drank themselves to excess, and then, sadly, went home and whacked mum. That seemed to be common practice, and I'm hoping we've got through that ugliness. But how disturbing was the 6 o'clock swill, and what effect do you think that had on drinking trends for New Zealanders? You might touch on how you think it might have affected Māori families, the 6 o'clock swill.
Well, it's an interesting one, because it's... you know, the swill is very much a thing in the cities. And funnily enough, it came out of an attempt, well, a piece of legislation during the Second World War to actually reduce the beer strength. They wanted efficiency, and they said, right, we're going to drop the beer strength from about 5% down to about 3.8. And of course, what that made people do was then drink more to get the same kind of effect. But they were drinking in that very narrow time between 5 and 6. So that was what led to fast drinking. And it really does grow up in the 50s and 60s, especially in the cities where you've got crowded pubs. And of course, that's the big period of Maori urbanisation, of people coming into the cities in much larger numbers and search of employment and other things. So you've got this environment, I think, where Maori and later on Pacifica people coming into New Zealand from rural settings into this crazy urban environment where of crowded pubs and some fairly problem drinking, but also publicans who, you know, take a fairly racist attitude sometimes to Maori in pubs, to Maori women in particular. So it's not a, you know, it's not a pleasant, it's not a welcoming environment for a lot of people. And I think, you know, it took us a long time to, even once we went to 10 o'clock closing, it took a long time, I think, to unpick some of that binge drinking culture. And I'm still not sure that we have, but...
Yeah, I don't think we have. There's almost a feast and famine attitude too. I see it in young blokes, mates of my sons, and even in my own lads who are Jack the Lads, and see, you know, they pour it into themselves, you know, it's just as the old man did too, so I don't want to sound, you know, put myself on a pedestal here, mate. We've all had our run-ins with the drink, haven't we? But I don't know how or when we're going to get through this and drink in a more real or sophisticated way. It seems, you know, power drinking still exists to this day. I'm thinking it's still as a result of that urban drift and the swill that we found in towns.
Oh, I think it does, that sort of thing does continue on for a long time, and then, you know, some of the alcohol advertising and what we got in the 80s, you know, so-called liberalisation of the licensing laws, where you end up with twice as many liquor selling outlets as we used to have, and of course we know that they're targeted into, you know, sometimes lower socioeconomic areas and larger numbers and cheap alcohol of various kinds. I think the real thing, I mean, as a nation of beer drinkers, we used to be in the top five. We're now down to about 27th. But I think that alcohol debate, you know, we really need to have a close look at what is it people are drinking and where are the problems. I mean, to me, one of the biggest changes in the last 20 years is the rise of the RTDs, of the spirit-based things. We're drinking less beer, probably better quality beer. Better quality beer. We're drinking more wine, the RTDs as well. So it's part of the alcohol debate is a matter of taking a close look and saying, what are different people drinking? Where are the problems? How do we target things rather than just talking about alcohol as a whole? You try and pick it apart a bit.
Well, I'm pleased you put a book together like this. The book is called Continuous Ferment, and you've listened today to Greg Ryan. If you're interested to follow it up, available in all good bookstores. It's sort of an overview of beer, the beer culture in our country. And while we've touched on the pros and cons of drinking per se, in some ways it's more refined than that, because beer is part of our everyday lives, and understanding it more might be beneficial to us and to those that we care about or like to have a drink with. It's a pleasure to meet you, Greg. Thanks very much for sharing some cordial with our peeps.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dale.
Thanks, mate. All the best to you, Greg. Thanks so much. And you're listening to 603 Urban Māori Radio.